Morning, everyone. We're settling down here in the conference room. I'm about to start the Transportation Technology and Trends Forum, the T3 Forum. So welcome, everyone. Good morning. This forum is something generated by Minnesota GuideStar and is supported by and hosted by SRF Consulting Group. This forum meets approximately quarterly, and it's largely an online community, and welcome everyone online that's participating today. Also here in our office in Plymouth, we've got about a dozen folks that have joined us in person as well, so welcome everyone. The goal of the T3 Forum in general is to share information on emerging technology within transportation. We have a focus on connected and automated vehicles. That's really the big impact that's coming along. But we're also looking at other trends, and for example, the last forum we talked about dockless scooters, and we'll be looking for other avenues and topics to talk about in the future. The target audience for these forums is anyone in the transportation community. We do have a bit of a focus on local agencies. How are cities, counties, and other locals interacting with technology, and particularly CAV? What are some planning and initiatives that they should be considering now to prepare for the future? This forum is intended to be kind of informal. We want to have some discussion after we hear from our speakers, a question and answer session. It's really an opportunity to learn from one another and share experiences. The topic for today's forum is how to collaborate with private sector providers within the CAV realm, connected automated vehicle realm. So one of the aspects we'll be looking at today is fair access to agency resources. So there's staff time, there's infrastructure such as roadside traffic signal cabinets that are all of interest in the CAV world, and how do local agencies allocate those time and resources to these emerging opportunities. Another topic is establishing equity within the different private sector CAV providers. We want to have equal access to those resources. And then also we want to hear what are some successful projects and outcomes that have been experienced by different agencies, and how can those be, what can we learn from those lessons learned? So in summary, change is occurring. How do we get out ahead of that as much as we can, be proactive, establish policy that'll lead us into the future? So my name is Eric Menge. I'm lead the ITS group here at SRF Consulting Group. I'm the forum moderator. Also working closely with me is Mike Marty here at SRF to put these on. For everyone on the line, if we could ask people to mute their phones, that would prevent any kind of interference during the discussions. And also, we encourage people to think of questions that you want to ask our forum speakers. There's a chat function within the Skype connection here, and you can go ahead and type your questions in there, and we'll be monitoring those throughout, and you can we'll ask those after we've heard from all three speakers. Also, for those in the room, there's some comment question cards posted on each table, and you feel free to grab a card and write a question on there and pass them up front. If there are any technical questions with the audio or the video of this forum, go ahead and also type those into the chat function in Skype, or else call SRF's main number, and we'll have someone in IT take a look and see how they can troubleshoot that. The number here at SRF is 763-475-0010. So that takes care of the housekeeping items. I'd like to go ahead now and introduce our three speakers. I'll introduce all three, and then we'll go ahead and get started. Coming up first is Tom Beaumont. He's a senior program manager in automated vehicles at the North Central Texas Council of Governments. That is the MPO for the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Tom is building an automated vehicle program that encompasses a variety of transportation technologies and policies, with many opportunities for collaboration with representatives from the public, private, and academic sectors. So Tom is our featured speaker. After him, we'll hear from Wayne Sandberg. Wayne is the Deputy Public Works Director and County Engineer for Washington County, one of the counties here in the Twin Cities metro area. Wayne oversees the county's Transportation Division and Parks Division. He is currently the president of the Minnesota County Engineers Association and serves on the Minnesota GuideStar Board of Directors. Our third speaker is Jay Hippus. Jay is the director of MnDOT's new Office of Connected and Automated Vehicles, the CAVEX office. In this role, Jay leads the statewide policy, research, and deployment of CAV technology. Jay has 22 years of experience in transportation and holds bachelor and master's degrees from the University of Minnesota. So with that introduction, I'll turn it over to Tom. And reminder, Tom, as you're speaking, just give a little indication when you'd like us to advance to the next slide, and I'll turn it over to you.
Great. Thank you, Eric. Thanks for the opportunity to be here. And it's very heartening to see how Minnesota has come together with things like GuideStar and the state DOT taking an active role in the CAV area. I work for the MPO for Dallas-Fort Worth, and one of my jobs is managing expectations. So next slide. One of this is, we have some of our policy board that sees AVs coming tomorrow and some never. And what we've done is come forward with two programs and got unanimous approval. And this visual kind of helped set the stage. The first is Fifth Avenue in 1900. You can see automobiles had barely hit the market. There was one with all these horse and buggies. Next slide. 13 years later, 13 years later, quick transformation. So we've level set with our policy board that AVs, there's going to be a period of development, but when it clicks, it's going to come quickly, and we as a region need to be prepared. So we put together two automated vehicle programs. Next slide. First is 1.0, and that is a mixture of funding proving grounds, basically AV deployments in campuses and communities. We've also identified a test corridor on a local interstate that we're working to make into a technology test corridor. And then we've provided grants to our local communities to start making their traffic signal data accessible to the developer community and get in the Waze Connect Citizens program, which is a great way to help manage traffic flow through the communities, but also tap into a really rich set of data flow. And then finally, we're exploring ways to use automated vehicles to basically reimagine people mover systems, to think of systems moving people and freight at least partially on simplified fixed guideways, but also connecting those fixed guideways to the street network in sort of a distributor. And so in these programs, we had plenty of interaction with the private sector, certainly on the traffic signal data front, dealing with various traffic signal system vendors. Some have been supportive, some have been less supportive. And we've had two automated vehicle deployments in two of our cities, Frisco and Plano, where we've helped be a liaison with the private sector, and we've by introducing them to local communities that we believe to be receptive to hosting an automated vehicle deployment. So much of the work that we do at this point is outside of standard procurement. A lot of it is matchmaking, where we are again, introducing the AV developer community to local partners and seeing where there may be an opportunity for a private AV developer to come in and do deployments. So we've had, again, a couple of deployments of automated robo-taxi service, and we have some coming deployments with low-speed freight delivery robots. Next slide. So here's traffic signal data. We can advance through this. I've talked about it. Next slide. again, Waze Connected Citizens, what we've done is we've incorporated the Waze data stream into our 511 DFW. What we're trying to do is match industry best practices of having a open data portal. So we're using our 511 DFW system as an open data portal for transportation data in the region. We want to get to a point where we have a one-stop shop where the private developer community can access regional transportation data for travel navigation, connected and automated vehicle operation, infrastructure assessment, all sorts of things. Transport for London is probably a global leader in this area and has done a recent study and found that its transportation data powered something like 500 applications and generated about $100 million a year in economic benefit. So we would like to do the same in DFW. Again, public-private partnership, not traditional procurement kind of goods and services, but more in the realm of partnership. Next slide. And that gets us to what we call AV 2.0, which has three projects. One project is we want to bring, where we're putting together classes of communities. So we'll have a class of our largest cities, medium-sized cities, and then a class of smaller cities. And we will engage AV experts and help those communities plan for the automated vehicles. And our scope of planning will be more than just the vehicles themselves, but looking at things like curb space and other features, shared mobility versus privately owned vehicles, all of the big questions that we're familiar with automated and connected vehicles. But we want communities to get ahead of the coming changes in transportation through some effective planning. And we'll use this planning process to kind of generate policies for our policy board to consider. And we believe that throughout this process, we'll engage the private sector, things like guest speakers, even product demos, perhaps, of where we, utilize their expertise and insights as part of the planning process. One of the things we've done internally is set up what we call a mobility data working group, because we see the data infrastructure for connecting automated vehicles as being really important. And we use that as a way to bring in experts and everything from blockchain. We brought in HERE and INREX and other travel navigation services, data visualization experts, et cetera. Again, engaging in the private sector, learning from the private sector, kind of outside of the standard procurement process, but just through a, somewhat informal engagement. But those engagements give us ideas that, down the line will lead to more traditional projects and programs. So again, project number one, we want as a region to plan ahead, and we'll certainly, one of our important planning partners in this effort will be the real estate sector. We have a lot of interest in the real estate sector into what vehicle automation may mean to the way we build. And frankly, real estate developers would love to get rid of parking, and AVs may be a way for them to do so. So they'll be an important part of the planning process. Next slide. Second thing is what we call AV deployment cost coverage. So again, our goal is as much as possible to get as much done via private sector investment versus public investing public dollars. So what we're doing with this is we're putting a pool of funds that our local communities can tap into if an automated vehicle developer comes to their community and rolls out of deployment. So there's, you know, everything from legal expense to training emergency responders to making infrastructure improvements to accommodate an automated vehicle deployment. We want every community in the region to be able to effectively partner with private AV developers when they come to our communities. And this notion that every community in our region, regardless of resources, can be an effective partner is very important to us. And we have found in our existing AV deployments with Plano or with Frisco and Arlington that the AV developers have been quite receptive to building effective partnerships. So that means things like tabletop exercises with, you know, the full range of city officials from media relations to emergency response to, you know, go through scenarios. That means making infrastructure improvements, you know, painting, striping. That means thinking about cutouts for passenger pickup and drop off. Those kinds of things are ways that local communities can help, again, be effective partnerships without actually buying the AV service themselves. So again, this is a pool of money to help them be effective partners in a public-private partnership. Next slide. And then we recognize that there may be some communities and some use cases that the AV developer community is not exploring. So this could be getting low-wage workers to their jobs. It could be AV service in rural communities. There may be a number of use cases that, you know, are not profitable and if not of interest to the private AV community. So we recognize there is a role for public investment. So we have this investment fund where we will actually use public dollars to buy AV services to explore use cases and support communities trying to address mobility needs through AV service. So next slide. And, you know, what we've made this as a voluntary process for our local communities, we've asked them to raise their hand if they're interested in participating in the planning process and beyond. And those, we've gotten almost 20 communities who have said they want to participate, including the largest communities down to some very small communities. And we've been very heartened by the response. And once they're in, we'll try to, frankly, the state and federal funding and approval processes are so slow and so cumbersome that we're going to do as much of the paperwork as we can position them so they can tap into these dollars. You know, we had one AV developer come to our region last January. By March, they decided which community they wanted to deploy in. They rolled out vehicles in July for a six-month pilot. So those of you who know what it's like to deal with, accessing state and federal dollars in the approval process, that typically, at least in our region, takes a year or more, which, we're fighting a situation where we can have AV pilots, come into existence and complete themselves within the time frame of just getting, the approval processes done. So that's why we are working as much as possible outside of the traditional procurement program process and functioning more as matchmaking and, again, kind of encouraging informal public-private partnerships between AV developers and communities in which they want to locate themselves. Next slide. These are policies wanting to do four clicks. We adopted four policies in conjunction with AV 2.0, and the main one are those I've already referenced, two and three, where we will we want to have all communities, regardless of wealth, be able to participate, and we want to make those strategic investments to make sure the public interest is being served by automated vehicles. Next slide. And finally, you know, we are part of a Texas, you know, network of universities, cities, transit agencies, including our Department of Transportation. We've organized into what we call the Texas Innovation Alliance. And what that is, you know, basically a collaborative environment where we have weekly calls to share information, comment on legislation, keep each other informed of what we're doing, sharing resources, and frankly, just sometimes just encouraging each other to work together on transportation innovation. So one of the yearly activities, we've held a Texas Mobility Summit for the last 3 years. And that's been an opportunity to bring the private sector and the public sector together. And we have, you know, common workshops, we have visioning sessions, we put together kind of transportation agendas for that we then take to TxDOT and our own cities. And it's a great, I mean, we hosted the last one in October, and we had 25 vendors with vehicles, with technology displays, and it was very heartening to see the executive director of TxDOT take his first ride in an automated vehicle, take his first ride on a scooter, and take his first ride on an you know, an EV shared mobility bike. So we have used the alliance to expose, and we have a heavy participation by the political community, and it's great to have that that opportunity for politicians, transportation experts, and the private sector to interact outside of a formal procurement process, and again, share ideas and inspiration. So with that, that's kind of a summary of what we're doing. We're working as much as possible kind of outside of traditional grants, programs, projects to encourage, you know, public-private participation in developing CAVs and related transportation technologies. And thus far, quite frankly, the experience has been good. Partners like Waze with the Connected Citizens Program, TrafficWare on the traffic signal data sharing front, and other companies. Drive AI has been a very good partner with its automated vehicle deployments here in North Texas. That if your communities are if the internal departments can work together and view the private sector responsibly and with a healthy dose of skepticism, but still engage them with a problem-solving mentality, an awful lot can get done. And I'll just close with the example of our first automated vehicle deployment, where the developer selected a community in March, and by July, the community, a local transit agency, and three private real estate developers came together into a transportation management association and, you know, entered into agreements with the AV developer, came up with a funding source, came up with a governing kind of a governing body, and made it happen by July of that year. So these things can get done, and it's sometimes you just have to kind of take a startup mentality to things and look for low-hanging fruit that doesn't require you to drill in deeply into, again, traditional funding sources. So with that, I'll conclude, and I really look forward to hearing from the other speakers.
Great. Thank you much, Tom. Appreciate your remarks. We've got your contact information up here if anyone wants to follow up with you. Moving on then to the next speaker, Wayne Sandberg. Thank you.
Thanks, Eric. As Eric mentioned, my name is Wayne Sandberg. I serve as the Washington County Engineer. I'm also the president of the Minnesota County Engineers Association. I've also served on the GuideStar Board of Directors for a number of years. Eric asked if I would just give a snapshot of where counties are, the more local agencies, and some of the challenges that we're experiencing as we think about this technology and implementation. So when we look at the highway system in Minnesota, it turns out we have a lot of road miles. In fact, if we look at lane miles, Minnesota ranks fifth in the nation in the number of lane miles. We're only behind Texas, California, Illinois, and Kansas. So this has been great for the commerce and the economy of Minnesota, but it presents a challenge. This slide shows the breakdown of centerline miles, and you can see that when we talk about the state system, that's the smallest of the systems. As we continue down from state to county to city to township, the size of the system increases dramatically. It also increases in variability and becomes more complex in some ways. We have highly variable systems ranging from two-lane rural roads to multi-lane suburban arterials. Intersection and access points are variable and are common all over the system. In our more urban areas, we're seeing our multimodal corridors where vehicles are sharing space with bike, ped, and transit. And all these roads also vary in quality, including surfacing. We have in the rural areas of the state, some of our county roads are minimum maintenance roads. They're closed for big parts of the year. We also have significant gravel road mileage. For snow and ice control, how we maintain these, it's also very variable. In the metro area, we have wet pavement policies, but in the more rural areas, you might have snow on the ground all winter on the road, obscuring pavement markings and things like that. So again, these all present some potential challenges moving forward. Further, the equipment that we use to operate these systems can vary across jurisdiction and even within jurisdiction. For example, traffic signal controllers come in multiple types, and compatibility can be a challenge, as well as security, which we've talked about. So one step in developing standardization is to develop uniform communication protocols, something that the industry is working on. Some key policy issues for locals, so as these questions, and really counties haven't really started having these discussions yet. We're just getting started. You know, how do we share data with the private sector? How does additional data, could that help us? Is there a positive on the other side for the counties or for the locals? How do we deal with different data protocols and so forth? But the big issue is all this stuff's going to cost money. And when we talk about transportation funding in Minnesota, locals are struggling even to keep up with our pavement quality. So wholesale implementation of new infrastructure without some funding stream is going to be a challenge, and that's why I really appreciated Tom's comments on his presentation about these partnerships that might be out there, partnerships with the AV developers and the private sector that can help spearhead this implementation and help smaller agencies stay in pace with where this is going. So with this framework, what are counties doing now? The reality is counties are just getting started. We polled the metro counties recently and found that there have not been any major implementations yet. No surprise, Hennepin County, the largest county in Minnesota, is the most advanced. They're looking at right now implementation between 5 and 10 signals of broadcasting, signal phasing, and timing. So they're just getting started, but they have not implemented that yet. No major policy shifts have been adopted. Local agencies, we're just getting educated on this. And one of the big gaps is our elected officials. We have got to get them up to speed on what this technology is and why it's important to be considering it. The County Engineers Association of Minnesota has taken a big step. We've developed our own Connected and Autonomous Vehicle Committee, working with the state, and you'll hear from Jay in a minute, to try to do those very things, educate not only engineers but also our policymakers. This doesn't mean counties can't start taking steps now. A recent LRRB study concluded that local agencies should really begin by considering their infrastructure and developing some priorities. Things like pavement markings, can be improved at a relatively low cost. Flashing arrow implementation is big in Minnesota right now, and local agencies can take that opportunity to upgrade their signal cabinets, getting ready for these types of additional technological upgrades. Again, back to education, I think that's a big part of what we can do. We need to do more to educate our engineers, but also our local elected leaders. There's a big policy maker gap in knowledge on this, and we're going to need to address this to really see any progress moving forward. Where are the next steps? We have great leadership in Minnesota. You're going to hear from Jay, and MnDOT has really stepped up and developed a whole division that's really identified and focused on this. We have extra challenges, our climate being one, so we need to work together to make this a reality. And the Local Road Research Board is considering a study that would survey local agencies all across the nation and potentially across the world to get a sense of where they are on there, how the private sector has partnered with local agencies to see this implementation go forward, and we can hopefully use that in Minnesota to drive some progress on this. So that's what I have.
All right. Thank you much, Wayne. I appreciate those insights there and the local perspective. We'll now shift to Jay Hippus. And Jay, you can go ahead and make your remarks.
Sounds great. Thank you for having me on today. If you want to go to the second slide, please. I'm just going to give two sections to this presentation. The first part is just what's new, some of the things that we're working on, and some policy updates. Go to the next slide. So MnDOT is actually happy to announce a partnership with VSI Labs out of St. Louis Park. Both Tom and Wayne mentioned that the importance of getting people educated, especially our policymakers, on automated and connected vehicle technology. What we're doing with VSI Labs is they have basically level 4 automated vehicles where they can take their hands off the steering wheel and they can have their vehicles drive down different roadways and they can set up these different courses. So we're partnering with them to set up 3 locations still to be determined, one probably around the Capitol and 2 others probably in the metro area. But a great way to bring people in, get them a chance to see and touch and experience the vehicle. So this might be a great partnering opportunity for the cities and counties to have some of your legislators and some of your policymakers come and experience this vehicle also. So we're just getting started, but we'll let you know more information about these demonstrations. Next slide, please. We've heard about the Governor's Advisory Council. The council is actually set to expire in April from the executive order. We're looking at renewing that executive order and maintaining an advisory council to kind of provide some oversight to where we're going throughout the state. The report is available and online if you want to read it. There are some key pieces in there for local units of government, but there's a few key pieces that we're really moving forward with. If you want to go to the next slide. The big question is, what's next with the report? One, there's a lot of data inside that report, and we're actually going to start looking at that report and from the CTS workshop that was conducted last June and really start to prioritize a lot of things. But 2 main things are really happening and moving forward right now, and those both deal with truck platooning and automated vehicle testing. Next slide, please. So we currently have 2 bills under consideration at the legislature. We've had hearings on both these bills so far. One would allow truck platooning to occur only on the MnDOT system for right now. This is where the vehicles will primarily operate on the freeway type systems and expressways. That bill has been heard and has been laid on the table for inclusion in an omnibus bill. We've also had a hearing on automated vehicle testing bill. This would allow permitting of automated vehicles to operate on public roadways. There was a hearing last week in the Senate and probably a hearing either tomorrow or on Tuesday in the House. So we are hoping to get some clear regulations on testing. Right now our laws are very gray, so if State Patrol pulls somebody over, they're not really sure if they should be cited or not. This is to provide some clarity to the law. Next slide, please. So one of the topics for today was working with the industry and some of those challenges and opportunities that come along with it. Next slide, please. One of the things that we are doing in Minnesota to help spur that innovation piece, if you haven't heard about it, is the Minnesota Cab Challenge. This is really an innovative procurement process. What we do is we've just put a challenge out there to the industry. We say, we know you have technology that you're working on, you're developing, that can help us advance cab in Minnesota. So we're interested in work zones and safety and public engagement and building public trust. through demonstrations. Snow and ice are some of the considerations for us in equity. And what this basically is if the industry has an idea, they come to MnDOT and they pitch the idea to us first in a one-on-one meeting, and we can say, nope, that's a really innovative idea that's going to move our goals forward. Why don't you submit a proposal? Those proposals come in, and we don't score them against each other. We kind of score them against themselves. So it's really a way to solicit unsolicited proposal. This is an opportunity for the local governments to get involved. But we have actually had several proposals submitted where a city or a county has actually teamed up with the private industry to get funds from MnDOT to actually do some testing or some implementation. So I can't go into any details right now. We are in the process of awarding some of those contracts. And once they are awarded, we'll be able to make some announcements on what those things are. But they cover anything from connected vehicles to automated vehicles to testing. So anything in that realm is open. And say these are open for local units of governments to apply, as long as MnDOT can see that there's a trunk highway fund purpose in what the results would be. A very, very great opportunity to allow that industry to provide some innovative ideas. Next slide, please. But there are a lot of challenges. We get approached a lot by the private industry with try this or try that. This is one of the reasons why we set up the Minnesota Cab Challenge, is to make sure that everybody's on an equal playing field. That was brought up in some of the earlier presentations, that we're not favoring one industry or one particular product versus the other. But some of the things, some lessons learned that we've had is the standards piece, where people will say, try this technology because this is what's going to be needed in the future. A lot of times we don't really know what that future standard is. So how do we know that a vehicle would actually be able to talk to the infrastructure or the widget that you're going to put inside of our signal system cabinets? How do I know that the sign sheeting needs to be at a certain level before that the automated vehicles can actually use? So really thinking about what is actually the standard and where is the industry going is something that we always look at when we're approached by the private industry. Liability is another big piece too. Anything that we're doing, we're looking at liability and making sure we're not taking on any additional liability. For example, with the AV demonstrations that we've done, we make sure that they have the insurance. We don't take any liability on in terms of touching the vehicle or operating the vehicle or any type of ownership in the vehicle at all. We want that all to rely on the public sector and not take any additional unnecessary liability. So making sure they have the proper insurance and not passing that risk on to the locals is very important too. A big thing that we're coming up across, especially with traffic signal systems and looking at signal phasing and timing through radio communications or data exchanges, is cybersecurity and data privacy pieces. This is an extremely big drain on our staff, is how do we get our data out to those third parties that want our data, and how can we actually work with them to get that data to them, because there's the benefit of them having the data. But the cybersecurity piece is really important to us too. We've had several vendors approach us and saying, I can get at your data really easy, MnDOT. Just plug this little black box into your system and the data will come right to us. Well, we don't know what that black box is, what it's going to do to our systems. We don't want our signal systems to be crashing. So cybersecurity is a huge priority for us. And of course, safety. Everything that we do, we're looking at the safety aspects too to make sure that we're not jeopardizing public safety. There are always going to be some inherent risks to when you're doing a connected or automated vehicle test, but making sure that safety is by far the number one piece. And then something that we've really been challenged with is the struggle between intellectual property and helping the industry advance, but without using government funds actually to advance their intellectual property. So we're fine testing some of these systems, but we're not really fine paying for the developer to go back and invest in their technology where they can go and make a profit. So it's kind of that fine line, is we're willing to test and give you some feedback and work with you because we have some benefits too, but I'm not going to hire your bunch of engineers to develop a product. It's crossing into that intellectual property area and government funding a private industry. So they're really tough to balance on the intellectual property piece, but those are very important things for us that we consider with any project that we do. So those are some of the opportunities and challenges and some of the new things that we're working on at MnDOT. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Jay. So a little time check here. This forum is scheduled to go until 8:45, but we'll often go beyond that by a few minutes to capture some questions and have some further discussions. So I've captured a couple of questions through the chat function here on Skype, and Tom, they're both for you, it looks like. So I'm going to go ahead and ask those, and if other folks have some questions, you can go ahead and submit those in the room. Same thing, fill out that card and send it up front. So I'll start with my first question then for Tom. Could you please discuss special agreements or contracts and processes you've implemented with the private sector providers.
Tom, you're muted. If you want to go ahead and make sure you're unmuted on your end.
You still muted?
Nope, here he comes.
Am I unmuted?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay, sorry about that. Most of the agreements are actually handled by the local communities. So I mentioned the AV developer who came to Frisco. The city came together with a local transit agency and three private real estate developers to put a structure together with the AV developer. City of Arlington's had two AV deployments. City staff has handled that with those AV developers. So what we try to do is, as the MPO, is facilitate best practices. When another community is interested, we put them in touch with communities who have had experience, and again, share best practices in that. The other thing we've done as an MPO, though, is on behalf of TxDOT, we have done procurements in technology, some technology areas, because, frankly, we can move more quickly than the state DOT. So we've done some technology procurements that have been accessible statewide. And we've worked with another MPO to do a statewide automated vehicle procurement process in Texas that was handled by the Houston-Galveston Area Council. And that resulted in the selection of three AV vendors who are qualified now to do business in Texas.
Okay. All right, thank you. The next question for Tom is regarding ways on 511 integration there. Were any specific design decisions made by agencies to integrate, filter, and or validate this crowdsourced data from the CAV perspective?
Yeah, this is a topic near and dear to my heart. I view ways incident reports like 911 calls, and the advantage the ways incident reports have that they have, confidence scores attached to them, unlike a 911 call. So what our 511 developers have done is, on the map that's displayed to the public, there's some screening of the Waze incident reports because they don't want the map to be overly cluttered, but the user is able to go in and get a fuller range of Waze incident reports if they wish. And I am hopeful that we will get to the point where the user is able to not just access all of the Waze incident data in one big mass, but they can turn layers on and off by incident type. So, for example, one of our regional partners, Tarrant County, which covers Fort Worth, used some out-of-the-box ESRI tools to create a Waze dashboard where the public, emergency responders, and others can go in and say, it's raining hard, I want to see all Waze reports of flooded roads. And they can just turn on a layer by an incident type, or a layer by just, major crashes, or a layer by major congestion. So we've, my personal view is this, is yes, understand that every incident report, some incident reports may not be perfectly accurate, just like some 911 calls aren't perfectly accurate, and frankly, just like some reports by public employees out in the field may not be perfectly accurate, but we're better off having that data out there where it can be accessed and cross-checked against other data, then we are keeping data in tight little silos and not sharing it.
And has any of that crowdsourced data been used from a CAV perspective?
Well, I will tell you that The two communities, Arlington and Frisco, where the AV developers have deployed, are the two communities that are leading the region and are actually kind of national leaders in using Waze data and in sharing traffic signal data. So we think it's no coincidence that AV developers are looking to communities and looking to states that are forward-thinking in their use of data, and that includes using available data streams, but also contributing their own data to the data stream. So, for example, Frisco not just integrates Waze incident data, streams it to its 911 emergency response center, as well as to its transportation department, and its 911 center has found that Waze data is an important way to validate 911 calls. AV developers find that significant. Oh, we're dealing with a local community that's forward thinking, that's adept with using data. For example, with Frisco, they have a protocol in place where there's road closures and whatnot. There's kind of immediate notification of the AV developer Drive AI of upcoming road closures. So these active participation in things like the Connected Citizens Program are an important way for communities to mark themselves as ready to be a productive partner with an AV developer. Final note on this, 5G seems to be important. For example, communities that have solid existing cellular coverage and where there are plans to upgrade to 5G, AV developers seem to find that of significance. So we have multiple automated high-speed truck firms that are looking at the DFW market. We have one company that's located an office here already, and they are looking for ahead to 5G coverage to do teleoperation of their trucks, primarily from the expressway to the distribution point, and then inside the distribution facility, they anticipate teleoperation using 5G networks. So I've heard some people say that in the future, regular motorists, you and I, will want we will pick our roadway path of travel by whether there's good 5G or not, because, you know, we want high definition crazy cat videos. The freight companies will do a similar way of picking metropolitan regions and routes that have really robust 5G coverage, so they can incorporate that in their automated vehicle technology.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Tom. I could see, as I'm driving to my automated vehicle, just wanting to watch my cat videos, and that would be the route selection that would drive how I'm commuting to work and such.
Or it may be your younger passengers who have high, like, you know, 9-year-olds who want high quality entertainment in the backseat.
Yeah, well, for sure. A couple of other questions have come in, but I do want to pause for a second and ask everyone listening in, if you have suggestions for future forum ideas, go ahead and pass those along through Skype or email one of us here at SRF, and we'll consider those. Another question came in, this one again for Tom. Question is, in connecting with city partners regarding potential deployments, did the cities approach the COG, or did you all reach out to them first?
What happened is, we, you know, part of my job is to be a liaison to the automated vehicle developer community, and just through that process, I knew a company was interested in locating outside of California, so reached out to them and. We spent 2 days visiting various local communities, And, you know, ultimately the AV developers selected which community they wanted to do their deployment. So they came to us, and then we introduced them and, again, kind of did the matchmaking process that helped the developer decide where to locate. And they did a multi-state kind of due diligence process, but ultimately settled on North Texas, which we were very pleased. But we've had a local community recently come to us and say they have an AV developer interested in locating in their community and ask for our assistance and help in that. And we've had AV developers come straight to us with specific deployment plans that then we have facilitated the introductions with those local communities. So it's been multiple roles, but in the end, what we're trying to do is be an effective resource for the private sector and introduce them to our local communities.
Okay. I've got a general question for all speakers, and I'll maybe start with you, Jay, on this one. And the question is, how receptive were policymakers and stakeholders to being educated on CAV?
I think initially there's a lot of skepticism on what the technology is. I think we're seeing that they realize that it's probably coming and we need to start being prepared for it. I think one of the biggest things is probably some misconceptions on what the technology actually is today. When we talk about these vehicles, the policymakers, they envision that these vehicles just have no drivers and they're driving around, and they're very concerned about the safety aspects of what the vehicles can and can't do. So I think we just need to reassure them that, yes, for the time being, there are still safety drivers inside of all these vehicles. That's probably the biggest thing, is getting over the perception that there's just unmanned vehicles roaming around the city streets. But they've been very receptive to learning about the technology and learning about what the limitations are and aren't and what the technology can do.
Tom, do you have an answer on that one?
Yeah, when I came in 2.5 years ago, I had a policy board that was revving to go. I mean, one of my first tasks was actually briefing them on Hyperloop, and I thought maybe my director was setting me up just to for sport, to have toughened up by a bunch of hard questions, and instead the discussion turned very positive. So we have a regional policy board that's very supportive. I probably do one speaking engagement a week to local officials, Chamber of Commerce's, Rotary Clubs. There's a lot of interest in both the public and private sector in this technology. And while maybe 2 or 3 years ago, some of it was they'll be here next year kind of stuff, there's a much more balanced view of the prospects for the technology, the timing of the technology, and also kind of a sobering sense that rather than us try to bend over backwards to accommodate vehicles, we need to step back and start thinking of what kind of communities and what kind of transportation system we want, and ask AVs to fit into that vision. There's a bit of, you know, we need to learn from the interstate highway experience, where we basically, enthusiastically accommodated interstates, especially in cities where there was a lot of perhaps unintended consequences. And we need to maybe do a little better job of AVs by, again, asking the technology to fit our vision of the community rather than fitting our community into the vision of the vehicle.
This is Wayne. When you think of our policymakers and our community leaders, there's certainly a thirst for knowledge on this topic, but I'll echo Jay's comments. There's a surprising amount of misunderstanding or misconceptions. But look, these are the folks that are going to be funding these implementations. They're going to be helping us proceed with adoption and acceptance in the community. And so just as important as the technical aspects of CAV is really, I feel strongly that the policymakers and education and bringing them along with us has to run on an absolute parallel track. and they both have to kind of keep pace with each other.
Okay. A question from here in the room. This one's for you, Jay. Question about truck platooning. What are some of the dependencies on infrastructure for truck platooning? Are they confined to the interstate system, trunk highway system, or are we going to allow truck platooning on county and other road networks?
Yeah, the draft bill right now is just on the MnDOT system. It would be freeways and expressways designated by the commissioner. So for the infrastructure piece, what we'll need to do is an assessment of all of our bridges first to make sure they're able to handle the loads. We're pretty confident that we're not going to have an issue, except for maybe some long span bridges will need a little more analysis. On the pavement side of things, we are working with our materials lab. They do have a little bit of concern about the pavement impacts for flexible pavements, just because of the dynamic loads of trucks. So right now, the requirement is trucks need to be 500 feet apart for spacing. What happens is that first truck goes over, the pavement is stressed and has a chance to rebound before the second truck comes. But now that the trucks are more closely spaced together, there could potentially be some infrastructure impacts to the pavements. We're not sure. No one really knows at this point in time. That's why we're kind of going through a permit planning process and not just allowing these freely like other states do. We wanted to test this technology first before we just said, yep, it's wide open on any MnDOT or freeway. But no, it does not include any city or county roads at this point in time. Primarily, to get the benefits of truck platooning, your speeds need to be about 60 miles per hour plus on a freeway type system to really get the economic benefits of the increased fuel efficiency. So that's why we just kind of limited it to the MnDOT system for now, and for us to get some lessons learned and share that with the cities and counties if they wanted to eventually expand it to their system.
Okay.
Brian, this is Krista calling from Mayford Road, full 2 year.
All right. I've got another question here online. It's kind of a multi-part question, and it's, I guess, anyone that wants to answer it. But I think, Jay, maybe I'll target this towards you first to answer, and then Tom or Wayne, if you want to think as well. CAV is touted as being a major player in increasing mobility. How do you tread on this without inducing demand and increasing congestion of traffic, parking, et cetera? Is there a balance that needs to be struck, such as connection before automation?
You want me to start with that one?
Yeah, go ahead if you want to start, Jay.
Yeah, one thing I think the industry is really driving this piece, so it's tough for us to dictate connection before automation. I think those two do go hand in hand. This is a tough one because, yes, there's a great potential that VMT will increase. A lot more people may actually have access. For example, persons with disabilities say, I can now have better access to jobs and healthcare and just improving their quality of life. So VMT may go up. I think it's one of those things where we need to start planning for what those impacts are and being proactive at the city, county, and state level, anticipating that it's going to come. And private industry is really driving it.
Okay. Let me ask the second part of this question then to you as well, Jay. Is freight or transit a more realistic avenue for deployment of CAV technology as opposed to passenger vehicles that may impact roadway congestion or increase VMT?
It could. I think one thing that's the big concern right now is the cost of the vehicles. The technology is very expensive to deploy and to operate. But some vehicle manufacturers, if you look at the new business models that Ford and the GMs are looking at, is not only are we going to be selling vehicles, but we're also going to be having a service for these vehicles too. So yeah, we do anticipate that maybe transit and freight might be some of the early adopters of the technology, but it's not unrealistic that someday these could be private ownership too. But the cost is going to be, the price point is going to be the biggest piece for private ownership.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, this is Tom. The projections are that VMT, if we basically replicate our current system with automated vehicles, we see more people and more demand, that you could see a VMT increase over the current by 50 or 60%. And, you know, one thing is, one response is to, you know, throw up your hands, let's build more roads, let's sprawl some more. But another approach is to really focus on, are there ways to use technology, both connected the onboard and otherwise to increase the carrying capacity, vehicle carrying capacity of our roadways, things like narrower lanes, reduced spacing between vehicles, things like that, to do that. And that's where I think state DOTs as well as US DOT could really help by focusing the AV developer community on ways to platoon regular vehicles. They don't have much outside of trucking, they don't have much of an incentive to do that. And that's where public research, public policies could help platoon. Another thing is that we have to encourage the proliferation of vehicle types. As we transition to more electric vehicle powertrains, you can accommodate a fuller range of vehicle sizes and types between our standard vehicle and motorized bikes. So think pods and two-person vehicles, things like that. Those kind of vehicles can really increase the carrying capacity of our roadways. And again, highway authorities have to, make the design and policy changes to make sure that streets and highways accommodate a broader range of vehicle types. And then we have to encourage, shared ride through tolling policies, parking charges, vehicle registration fees, you name it, where we incentivize folks, increase average vehicle occupancy. And with, handheld technology, things like Waze carpool, there are technical platforms, and we have to add public policy and financial incentives to encourage, a higher level of average vehicle occupancy. All those things put together, I think we should welcome the increased mobility that connected automated vehicles may give us, but we have to be much more effective in how we use our street and highway space to do so. And that's where I think is a key area for our public DOTs.
Great. Thanks for that input. All right, we're to come upon the 9 o'clock hour, so just a couple of final thoughts here. Remember to pass along any suggestions for future forum topics as well as speakers that we would want to possibly hear from. This presentation, the PDF of the actual visual presentation, will be posted on the website, SRF's website for the T3 forum, and we will also have a video podcast of this presentation posted there as well. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and stay tuned for the next date. We'll announce that.